Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this fine food. Friday, January 11th, I'm Ray Graff. Today we'll discuss an interesting and unique topic, I think, whole animal cooking. We'll learn about what it is and some interesting ways to put it into practice. In the studio to help answer any questions you may have are three cooks. Josh Coletto is the chef and co-owner of Nighthawks in Troy, New York. Mike Lappy is a culinary professor at SUNY Cobleskill, and Peter Barrett is a food writer and cooking instructor. If you have any questions about the practice of whole animal cooking, now is the time to call 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you may email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And it's Josh, Mike, Peter, your calls coming up on Food Friday right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today on this Food Friday, we explore the practice of whole animal cooking. We'll discuss what it is and the best meals to prepare using this method. Here to answer your questions are a trio of cooks. Josh Coletto is chef and co-owner of Nighthawks in Troy, New York. The restaurant specializes in whole animal cookery and interesting vegetable preparation. A Culinary Institute of America grad, Josh also worked at some of Portland, Oregon's top restaurants. Mike Lappy is an instructor of culinary arts and meat processing at SUNY Cobleskill. He is the former owner and chef of Church and Main Restaurant in Canajoharie. And Peter Barrett is a food writer and runs a cookblog.com. He's the author and photographer of Project 258, Making Dinner at Fish and Game, about the James Beard Award-winning restaurant in Hudson. But his primary focus has always been on home cooking. He grows, preserves, and cooks as much of his own food as possible and teaches others to do the same through his writing and classes. Josh, Mike, and Peter, welcome to Food Friday.
Thanks, Ray.
Thanks for having us.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551 if you have a question or comment about whole animal cooking. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. Well, before we get to the calls and before we get to all the delicious stuff here on the table, let's meet again our guests and all you guys have been on before. Peter Barrett, what's been new with you? Happy New Year.
Thanks. Happy New Year to you. In November, I took that trip to Italy.
Oh, yeah. How'd that? Now, what you were on, when were you on last time?
Summer, I think.
Okay.
We talked about fruit and making drinks.
Okay,
and
thank you for reminding me. That was my second question. What did we talk about? But I remember
we fermented a lot of fruit, and I brought you mead and liqueurs and things.
Oh, that's why I don't remember quite so well. So you went to Italy and?
Yeah, I took a group of 13 just wonderful people, mostly from this part of the world.
And you went to an old castle?
Yeah, 15th century castle in Umbria, and we spent 10 days learning all about the food and wine of that region.
Wow.
It was, frankly, just as good as it possibly could have been.
I bet.
And for anybody that's drooling out there in Radioland, I'm doing it again in March, and there are a few spots left. So if you go to the blog, cookblog.com, I put up a post on top there with all the details, and please come join us. It was truly life-changing for a lot of people.
That's great.
I can't say enough good things about it.
Mike Lappy, you, of course, are an instructor at SUNY Cobleskill, and the semester just underway, right?
Just getting started this week. I'm really excited. All my classes are full. We have a couple outside workshops going on with meat processing. Educating people on how they use whole animals and how they do it from start to finish.
I asked you in the break between the top of the show and when we just started now a moment ago if you ever had occasion to meet some of the scientists who have been on our show who are from SUNY Cobleskill, and you said, no, they keep me way on the other side of the campus.
Yeah.
Is that by design, you think?
Yeah.
How are your students this season?
Wonderful. I have another great group of students. A lot of students are taking the slaughter class as well as the meat processing class, and they do it and so they can see the animal come in live and to a finished product going back into the farmer's hands.
As I recall, you're quite the master of bacon.
Bacon, yeah. We do a really good bacon.
Is that a 400 level course to make the bacon properly?
Hopefully soon we'll have some extra meat processing courses that will just include smoking and charcuterie.
Nice, man. Nice. All right. Josh Coletto, co-owner and chef at Nighthawks in Troy. And I think the last time you were on was right before you guys were about to open, right?
Yeah, right as we were opening. I was still with Heirloom Fire at the time, and
how are things going at Nighthawks? I hear great things. I have, of course, not been because I go nowhere, but I've heard some good stuff.
It's been great. It's been a lot of fun. It keeps me busy all the time, running around, making sure everything's going smooth.
And you are somebody who really embraces the whole animal cooking.
Yeah, you know, it's always been super important to me to, you know, if an animal's willing to, or unwilling, you know, either way, to give its life for us to be able to eat it, we should use every single part of that and be thankful for what we're doing.
And, well, I guess that's a good seg. Let's talk about what we have in front of us here today, and then we'll get to the phones. What did we bring, starting with you, Josh?
Today I brought some Trotterbrunn, which is it's a German-style charcuterie item that is made with pig's feet. And
which one is that now?
That's this one right over here.
Okay.
So it's pig's feet that are slow cooked in a stock, and then I pull it and I hold it together with an aspic. It's pretty similar to head cheese.
Yeah, that's it's certainly interesting looking. I'll get the courage up to try it. What else?
Today I brought some brined and slow braised Sweet Tree Farm beef tongue.
Yeah.
On some of my mother's bread with a fermented horseradish butter. And some daikon sprouts that I've been sprouting at home.
You know, tongue is a dish that my grandmother was a German lady, and that was something that was pretty popular in the old days, but I don't recall her ever serving it once when I was a kid.
I eat it quite often. That's one of the best things about having all these local farms around is that often they have things like tongues, hearts, and livers and other organs that are available, and they're completely delicious and make a great meal.
But a heart, it's muscle. I mean, how can that be possibly?
Steak's muscle too, though.
Ray, I could make you a heart that you would probably like better than a strip loin.
Heart tacos?
Yes.
Heart tacos. I can see the listener complaints coming already. Peter Barrett, what did you bring?
I brought a few different things, all from the same half pig, which I get every year from my guy at Atticus Farm in West Shokan.
Mm-hmm.
I know that these two are friends with the good people at Climbing Tree Farm, who I wrote about in the book, actually.
That's where this Trotterbrunn is made from.
Excellent. Yeah, and they're lovely. They're just a little far from my house in terms of me buying from them to eat. But
right.
So I get from my guy, who's about a 20-minute drive from my house, and I brought some of my miso-cured bacon.
Okay.
Hold it up for me. That's this guy here, which I was upstairs.
We have so many mic trees that I still can't see it. Although,
this is what I was heating up right before
lovely. Yes.
Jumped
okay.
in here. A little bit of sourdough, and then I've got some head cheese, some brawn, which is like what Josh was describing, except made with the head, after I cut the cheeks off to make the guanciale, which is here, which is a cured
guanciale.
Cheek. Guancho is a jowl on a pig.
There you go.
And then this is culatello, which is from the ham. As you know, if you've ever been to an Italian deli or a restaurant where they have the whole prosciuttos hanging,
yeah.
or jambon or any kind of pig leg, it's a big chunk of animal, right? 20,
right.
25 pounds. And I have a family of three people. So what I do is seam butcher, a technique I learned in Gascony in southwestern France. I seam butcher it into individual muscles and then cure those like hams. But then they hang and dry in a matter of weeks instead of years, and it's much better for a small
operation. I saw Mike Lappy nodding his head. So is that something you would say that's the way to go, separate out the muscle?
I was just responding to the seam butchery, you know, with an animal. It's filled with seams and bones, and basically that's the rule book of, like, following a seam or a bone to correctly do it and to make the culatello is a great application.
Well, I must say that, you know, I try many things on this program, and I'm not sure I've ever tried any of the things we're about to try here on this program.
Perfect.
I may have had a tongue sandwich way back when, but I'm not sure. Let's tell you what, Zach, let's take an early break. The lines are starting to load up. We'll have some food, and then we will get down to business here with the calls. Number's 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. It's a Food Friday. Whole animal cookery today. Pardon us, we're all eating bacon. Boy, that's good stuff, Peter. That's really good bacon you made there.
Thank you.
How long did you did it take you to prepare that?
It's a 60-day. This one's a 60-day cure, and then smoke it for a couple hours to get it up to about 130, and then vacuum bag it and freeze it.
Okay, now when you say cure, explain. Just salt it and hang it?
Well, in my case, I use miso because it has a lot of extra complexity in the flavor, and it also has a lot of enzymes in it from the koji, which is the mold that is that instigates the fermentation. That's the same thing that that sake and soy sauce and a lot of Asian products are fermented with. And so what I find is that it adds extra layers of flavor. I use a little maple syrup, which I make myself with a friend of mine every winter, and a little bit of extra salt. Let it sit for a good long time, 2 months in this case, and then kind of wipe that off and give it a smoke on whatever hardwood I have in my wood pile. It's usually oak, just because that's where I live, is surrounded by oaks. And it's bacon, but it has a little extra slight tangy sourness to it, which I love. And I'm kind of addicted to it. It's sort of my go-to recipe now.
Well, you know, the fat is so delicious on that.
Yeah.
And if you follow Rick Orlando on any social media, he has been on a tear lately about how great for you pork fat
is. He has indeed.
Yeah. Oh, you've seen that.
Oh, sure. Rick and I are tight. Yeah.
All right. So let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. David at New Paltz has been waiting a long time. David, you're first. Go ahead.
Ray, thanks for a good show there.
Thanks.
Science program that you had yesterday, a guy on that had an acrological site. On his property, the stones.
Yep, the mounds and such, yeah.
It was early Dutch vineyard.
The
rocks were used to irrigate the plants around, that were planted around the rock. And what would happen is that in the summer, the rocks would get hot, and at night, they would condense the hot air against the... Well, actually, in the morning, after the rocks cooled at night, the hot air would condense against the rock, causing a moisture to water the plants. That was early irrigation for the plants. And also, because the rocks were hot, it gave them a month's growing season plus, you know, because it got warmer with the hot rocks. The soil got warmer around the rocks in the spring, and in the fall, giving them extra 2 weeks. And the crop of choice was grapes for making wine.
You know, David, ordinarily I would castigate you for being off topic here and mentioning yesterday's program, but you tied it into food so well that we'll give you bonus points here today on the program.
But I have a second statement,
splendid.
If I could.
Sure.
My grandmother used to make, and this has to do with the program, a dish called mystery meat with jelly beans. And it was quite delicious. And we asked her what it was, and she used to say, if you knew who it was or what it was, you wouldn't like it as much. But after being an adult and, you know, I got the recipe, she would take the animal, whatever it was, put it into a bucket, bury it in the ground for 28 days. It had to be 28 days. It couldn't be less or more. And she would take it out, maggots and all, and boil it. And the jelly beans were the maggots, and they were as sweet as could be. And the meat was very tender. So that's what her favorite dish was.
Well, David, I think we can end the show right now. Thank you very much. I appreciate that one. Hey, good job, man. Thank you for following up in such an interesting way. Hey, have a great weekend. Thanks for calling. Our number is 800-348-2551. You boys ever eat maggots?
I have not.
No?
I haven't had yet.
They're super nutritious.
Really?
Yeah. All right, they are. They're really high in fat
and
protein. Insects are incredibly nutritious.
Just a little note to producer Jim Lavoulis. If you ever book a show about maggots, I'm done. Okay? Just put it out there. The number is 800-348-2551. What fresh hell is this? Bob in Holland Patton. Bob, you're on.
Yes, I've made spaghetti sauce. I know this is a bit off topic, but I figured you have a couple of culinary experts there that would probably answer my questions.
I bet they will.
I've made spaghetti sauce for a number of years, probably half a century. And early on, I used to add... for God's sake, celery to it. And the first day that I had the sauce, it would be delicious. And after that, it would go downhill, start getting a rancid-y taste. Well, today I had a bowl of pea soup that a friend made. And for the first time, the pea soup had a rancid-y taste. So I asked my friend what she put in it.
Maggots?
And among the things she had added, the celery. And I said, that's it. I think it has a, what do you call it? For Pete's sake, I can't think of the correct word for it right now. But the same thing it would do in wine or whiskey. I can't think.
Oh,
what
boy. Sour mash?
No.
Anybody?
No,
can any of the panel
the
help
process,
out?
I'm a little stumped on this one.
Yeah, you've.
Well, I mean, celery has a particular character. It's slightly saline, slightly minerally. Rancidity is not a characteristic I associate with it. It may be that if you're using really old cooking oil or shortening or some hunk of really stale something from the back of the fridge,
yeah,
that could be doing it.
Perhaps the way that it's cooled.
Well, it would happen every time that I made spaghetti sauce with the celery in it.
I'll be darned.
And eliminate the celery with all the other same ingredients, and it would never happen.
That sounds like you solved the problem then.
Bob, I got to tell you something.
Yes.
You are a close second to Dave, because that was an interesting call as well. And thanks, man. Thanks for the call. Have a great weekend. So sometimes, guys, the show will go like this. And, you know, it gives me an idea for a future show, a future Food Friday. We'll just do a free-form Food Friday. We'll bring three or four chefs and cooks in and experts, and then people can just throw, you know, whatever they want.
Yeah, I like it, yeah.
Now, today, theoretically, the topic is whole animal cooking. And so we've discussed that a little bit. We have some more calls here on the line. And, gosh darn it, let's try it. 800-348-2551. Josh Coletto is here. Mike Lappy and Peter Barrett. Kerry in Plainfield, are you on topic, sir, or are you off topic, sir?
I'm on topic.
Way to go, hey,
Ray,
brother.
I think you got the right guys to probably answer my questions this afternoon.
Fine.
Okay. No, it's going to be a great show I think you're going to have. But anyways, I love pickled lamb's tongues, okay? And I'm not going to mention the name of the business, but in the 50s, there used to be the singing cowboy on TV. His first name was Roy, and his wife was Dale, so you probably got it.
Gotcha.
But anyways, this company, they do pickled eggs, which they always did. They do the pork hocks, I still believe. But they don't do lamb's tongues anymore, and I understand that they cannot do those lamb's tongues. It's not allowed. Is there any truth to that, and if so, why?
I'm not exactly sure and why they wouldn't be allowed to do lamb's tongues, but that's something that you could do on your own really easily just by sourcing them from a local farmer's market. A lot of times you'll go to a farmer's market and find that they have other things in their chests that aren't on their price sheets, and they're definitely willing to sell them. And they're, you know, that's how I do a lot of my shopping.
Oftentimes,
okay,
the
I understand
odd
that. Just like I said, it was really. I'm not lazy, but it's just a little more convenient to go to the store and buy them. and like I said, this company has the other products they've always had.
Right.
But,
yeah. Well, so you guys know of no prohibition against this.
No.
I have some pickled beef tongue that we made at Nighthawks right now.
There you go.
I love lamb's tongues.
Well, anyway, that's my question for the day.
Hey, Kerry, thanks a lot. We appreciate the call. It's Vox Pop. It's Food Friday. 800-348-2551 is the number. So you have pickled tongue at the...
Yeah, my sous chef, Nasty Nate, he...
Nasty Nate.
Yes. He put together some pickled beef tongue recently. That's
Is that popular over there?
You know, it's not super popular, but it's an interesting thing to put on the menu to... You know, let people try it that want to try.
Now, some of the things we have here, I mean, ordinarily, your typical, I would consider myself to be perhaps subtypical, but a typical American patron might look askance at some of these things. Do you have trouble educating your clientele?
You know, people that want to take the plunge and have something that they haven't had before will order that. We also, you know, we sell a ton of hamburgers.
Yeah.
But, you know, people come in and after they have a few hamburgers, they're like, maybe I'll try the head cheese today, or, you know, maybe I'll try the, you know, fried lamb heart or something a little different.
All right. You mentioned two things here. Let's first discuss head cheese. Well, we have people on the line and we'll get back to the phones in a moment. But the head cheese thing, this, believe it or not, this came up. A couple of my daughters said, what is head cheese? And I gave a very vague definition, having worked in the deli dozens and dozens and dozens of years ago. Explain to us what head cheese is. Peter, you start.
Sure. You take the head, or more than one, And you put them in a great big pot that you can submerge them easily in with some aromatics that you would recognize if you've ever made stock before, carrot, onion, celery, some herbs. And you let it go kind of low and slow for a few hours until it's really falling apart.
Yeah.
Then I take the heads out and you sort of pick them apart while they're still warm so you can separate the muscle from the fat and any gristly bits that you don't want.
Yeah.
You put that aside. You strain the liquid and give it a good hard boil down until it's a really gelatinous, you know, reduction.
Yeah.
You need, because it's going to be the glue that holds it all together.
Right.
And then you season the meat mixture. You add in anything that you want to eat. Mine has some mirepoix and some black trumpet mushrooms that I foraged in the woods. And then you put it in a mold, a loaf pan, a tureen, anything. And you pour in your reduced super jellied stock.
Yeah.
And you chill it, and it turns to a, you know, loaf of jellied meat. It's a classic way to use up all the little bits. That...
Well, I see Mike nodding his head. Do you want to try it? Do you want to give this a try?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
All right, let's see how it is.
The guy in the middle there.
You're the expert.
There's bread and jam.
Mike Lappy is here. So you would put bread, you'd put it on bread with some jam?
Yeah, well, this is kind of a spreadable thing. It's not super jellied, because I kind of like to spread it like a pate.
Yeah.
That's delicious.
Really good?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and do you make your own as well?
I certainly do, yeah. I made one for Josh recently at one of our dinners where I interlaid with the cured pork lobster and sweetbreads.
Oh,
and that
nice.
Was kind of like a luxurious take on head cheese.
And what are sweetbreads? This one right here?
No, in the middle. The
sweetbreads.
This. Okay, I can't grab that. I need a fork.
Are the thymus gland on younger lamb and beef, which are extremely delicious and quite the delicacy.
Yeah, now, are those? Can you commonly get those at butchers nowadays? I know that that's something that has been around for a long, long time.
If you ask your processor to save sweetbreads, most likely they will do that for you.
All right, let's take a call here, and I'll try this. 800-348-2551. We go to Jim in Adams, Mass. Jim, you're on.
Yay, Ray.
How you doing?
Another great show.
Hey, well, we try.
I wonder if any of your guests or yourself ever tried blood sausage or made it.
I've made blood sausage when I lived in Oregon. We would do it at the restaurant. Uh-huh. We do more the Spanish morcilla style with rice in it as well. And it's always it's an interesting and fun process.
Yes, I had my first blood sausage sandwich at a nice little European-style deli on North Street in Pittsfield, Massachusetts called Maria's. And it was excellent tasting. As far as the question your previous caller had on, Kerry from Plainfield, if he's listening, Kerry, it's Jim D. from Adams. You know who I am. You know my brother Pete. Anyway, Kerry, I believe they may have had some sort of a bacterial or some other kind of problem with those lamb's tongues, and I don't think there's an actual law, rule, regulation stopping from doing, but they just didn't care to get back into doing that.
All right. Well, thanks,
type of
Jim.
Thing in that company, I believe.
All right.
You can go to, there's a lamb producer over in South Williamstown or Lanesboro, Sky Meadow Farm, I think it's called.
Yeah.
And they would probably, or whoever processes for them, you got the Mountaintop meat processor up in Savoy, Mass. You can ask him if he could save you some tongues.
All right. Well,
throw them in some nice marinade.
Thanks, Jim. We appreciate the call from you. Okay, Peter, this is pretty good.
Thanks.
I got to say, it's different than I expected it to be. It's rather mild and very nice.
Well, it's just another part of the animal. Now, if you live in an area which is populated by more people who come from other parts of the world,
right?
None of this is news. Asia, Central and South America. I mean, if you want to learn how to handle tongue and organ meat, big chunks of Italy, most of the rest of the world, frankly, is all over this stuff because it's delicious. And it's, like Josh was saying, it's frankly unethical to not eat it if you're going to eat animals. So, and going back to something Mike was saying, if you do shop at farmers markets or your local butcher, they will be so thrilled if you ask them for some of this slightly off-pieced food. They have trouble moving it.
Yeah.
You can get really good deals on it, and you can learn an awful lot about how to transform what in Italy they call the quinto quarto, the fifth quarter, which was always the butcher's portion, the stuff that was kept back because it was less expensive, and so he would feed his family with tongues and livers and whatnot. And you can learn a lot and really open up your horizons. And you're not taking one for the team. This is some of the best food on the animal.
This is almost, as you say, spreadable. You can almost put this on bread and almost in a liverwursty kind of way.
Yeah, well, that's how I like to do it.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Mike Lappy is an instructor of culinary arts and meat processing at SUNY Cobleskill. Peter Barrett is a food writer and a blogger, and he has a website, acookblog.com. Josh Coletto is chef and co-owner of Nighthawks in Troy. That's a restaurant that specializes in whole animal cookery and various other delicious things. Let's go back to our phones right now, and we go to Nikki in Germantown.
Hi, hello.
Hello.
Hello. I have a question about sous vide cooking. My son gave me a sous vide for Christmas, and he feels that it's a preferable way to prepare meat, even though there's an additional step of searing the meat afterwards. And I wondered if your panel could comment on how the texture of the meat might be different cooked in a sous vide.
Well, there's so many different cuts of meat. What are you talking as far as like the cut for sous vide cooking?
Well, the sous vide that I have, so you seal your meat in a plastic bag and submerge it in a controlled temperature water bath. I haven't used it yet.
Yeah, but are you doing like a steak or a pot roast or maybe some tongues?
Well, my son said that a flank steak would be delicious in there, and I've just always grilled the meat. I've always marinated it and grilled it, and so I'm not sure what the advantage is. It seems like it would take much longer to do it in the sous vide bath.
I don't personally like it for those kind of applications too much. I think grilling a flank steak is great. I would like the sous vide for something like if I'm doing a whole pork loin or, you know, and you can cook it to a specific temperature, or if you're doing a prime rib and you want to cook the whole thing to 125 in the sous vide for a few hours and then take it out and sear it on the outside and it will be, you know, consistent temperature throughout, or even like instead of a braise, doing it sous vide for, you know, 36 hours and coming up with like a really interesting texture that you can't get from other types of cooking.
Well, I'm going to have to experiment with it and learn how to use it, I guess.
Yeah, have fun.
All right, thanks a lot for the call, Nikki. Our number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. All right, before we take our next break, all right, anybody who's squeamish, just turn it off for a minute. I have a question that I have to ask because it's on my mind, and so I'll give you a second. Just you come back in 1 minute, all right? So getting back to the head cheese, all right? Now, you say you plop the head in a pot. You know, eating cow brain, not a very safe thing these days. Is the brain in there?
It is. But frankly, getting a pig's brain out of the skull without a bandsaw is not very easy to do.
This is a pig's brain.
In this case, this is a pig that we're talking about.
But what about in the case of cows? I mean, you have this disease that is very extremely rare, but you can get this.
You can.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of whole animal, as a civilian, right? If you have a restaurant, obviously, if you're equipped, you can certainly take in a whole or a half cow. As a civilian with a modest chest freezer, cows are frankly too big. Also, I find that this region does a better job with lamb and goat and pork than it does with cows. And so I've been eating a lot less beef and a lot more of the smaller quadrupeds that I think do a more efficient job of turning our landscape into calories.
Well, let's turn it over to Mike Lappy now.
Beef are harvested in a different way than pork or sheep. A lot of times you can electrically stun a sheep or a pig, but beef are harvested with a captive bolt, which you will not be able to retain the head because it has a puncture to the forehead.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm glad I asked. All right, back to the phones, 800-348-2551. All right. If you're not listening now because you turned your radio off, you can turn the radio back on. Let's go to Carolyn. That doesn't make any sense. Carolyn in Loudonville.
Thank you for taking my call. Okay. I have an observation and a question.
Okay.
My observation is that I was raised eating pickled pig's feet. You would buy the pig's feet in a glass jar and then dip them in a batter and fry them. And that's a wonderful dish if you've never tried it. Now, my question is, I have a pot of a standing rib roast. I cooked a 11-pound standing rib roast, and it was not eaten entirely, and I want to serve it again, but I want to reheat it without. It was rare, and it was perfect the first time. How can I reheat it without making it overdone?
Who wants to go? Josh, you're the, come on.
I would say, you know, I'd like to slice it thin and just not reheat it and make some nice sandwiches with it.
Yeah, roast beef sandwiches.
Can't beat that.
I mean, a super low oven, right? If you want it rare, if you can control your oven to be at 120, you could put it in there for a little while and just warm it. But you're going to risk overcooking it if you put some real heat on it.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Carolyn. We appreciate it. Let's take a break here. 800-348-2551. It's Food Friday with Peter Barrett, Mike Lappy, and Josh Coletto, and of course you, and of course me. We'll all be back after this. Welcome back to A Food Friday. Ray Graff with you, 800-348-2551. Mike Lappy, Peter Barrett, and Josh Coletto join us today, and we talk whole animal cooking and a couple of emails here, and then we'll get back to the phones. By the way, the little tongue sandwich, delicious. Who brought that?
I did.
That's good stuff, man.
Thank you. Very good. Thank you.
And well adorned with some sprouty things, yeah?
Oh, yeah, that's a sprouted daikon, but the tongue is from Sweet Tree Farm in Carlisle, and they do an exceptional job producing all grass-finished beef, and they're at the Troy Farmers Market on Sundays or Saturdays.
This one came in from Matt, who writes, I've done some basic curing with things like salmon, but I'd be interested in creating some cured pork product. What's a good piece of charcuterie that a home cook can start off with? That's from Matt.
Bacon.
Bacon's pretty good.
Bacon.
I think the easiest is probably duck breast, actually. It's not pork, but it's a good gateway meat to the wild world of charcuterie, partially because it's a very small portion. And it's really, bacon is a several step process. It's also well worth it because it's pretty much the best thing in the world. But a duck breast, you pretty much just pack it in salt overnight, rinse it off, hang it up.
You agree, Josh?
Somewhere cool.
Yeah, duck breasts are great. You can nice in a home fridge, really easy.
Yeah.
Well, getting back to the actual question, though, what would be the easiest pork to do?
I think, you know, maybe some stuff that's not dry cured, like doing Canadian bacon would be something that you could do, you know, a small pork loin or just a portion of a belly for bacon.
Okay.
The dry curing is a little more involved, and in a home fridge, sometimes it's a little tough.
Okay. This one is, I don't know who this is from. It says, what differences do you see between animals raised on pasture versus animal raised in confinement?
All animals are raised, if they're raised well and taken care of, they both have great equal attributes. But, you know, they can both be done really well. That's what I'm going to say is that
okay.
I'm a fan of both animals raised in confinement and on strictly pasture. But if it's done well, it is done well.
All right. Well, the lines are really, really loaded here. So let's jump back and try to get to as many calls as we can. Kevin in Averill Park. Zach, don't worry. Mike was just sort of leaning over to get something. The studio's not falling down. Kevin, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. Very good show. I did a catering event a couple years ago for a Scottish group, and they served haggis. And I had haggis overseas, but I'd never had it in the U.S. So I asked the fellow who bought it, I said, did you buy it locally, or did you have it imported? He said, no, you can't import it because it has lung in it. And I had never heard that in all my years.
Absolutely.
It's just something new. I guess old guys can learn new tricks, huh?
Yeah, all right. Well, hey, you're opening a restaurant, aren't you, Kevin?
Eventually, yeah. We're moving slowly, but we're getting there.
Good, man. When do you think it's going to happen?
I've missed my target so far. I'm looking at the end of March, beginning of April right now.
All right. Well, good luck, and let us know when you get it done, all right?
We won't be serving haggis either way.
Fair enough. All right, well, Kevin, Happy New Year. Thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. Anybody make haggis here ever?
I've never made haggis. No.
I mean, you guys, even you have your limits, right?
I wouldn't say limits.
I can't. You can't get your hands on some of this stuff.
You'd have to process the animal yourself because you can't get lungs.
All right,
among other things.
Alex in Germantown. Alex, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I've been getting really experimental and going into cooking more organ meat. I have a freezer with about 3 beef hearts in it right now, and I was just curious what your favorite ways to prepare a beef heart would be.
I love beef heart just marinated and put on the grill. If you cut the thinnest ventricle open and splay the heart, you can kind of trim it out so it almost resembles what would be like a flank steak. And if you grill it in the same fashion with a little marinade, it's equally as good. And it's a lean cut of meat that has a lot of flavor.
Okay.
Yeah. You made beef heart pastrami at the restaurant as well.
Beef heart pastrami.
Which was very popular.
So would that be like a braising thing?
It's you cure it with black pepper, salt, some sugar. I put some coriander in there too. And then you smoke it after the cure, and you just smoke it till it's cooked through.
I also have at home, I keep a jar of dried beef heart. And if I want an extra amount of flavor on, say, a spaghetti or something, I have this dried beef heart where you can grate it almost like cheese over a pasta or another dish, and it really adds a level of complexity of flavor.
That's pretty fascinating.
So it's like a katsuobushi, but with beef heart. That's fantastic. Yeah. I love it.
Well, Alex, thank you for the call. It is a Food Friday. Peter Barrett is here, Mike Lappy and Josh Coletto. And over to John in Del Mar. John, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I had two questions. One was where to get, what restaurants might serve veal, beef, or lamb kidneys. And the other question is that there was that $3 million tuna that sold. I don't know if you saw that.
A $3 million tuna? What happened?
Yeah, bluefin tuna. I was wondering if you had any comments on something like that.
Why did it cost $3 million?
Because there are very few of them left.
Oh.
We're going to see the end of bluefin in our lifetime.
But he's going to sell it. The article said he was chopping it up and ready to sell.
Well, but that's the unfortunate irony, is that the fewer of them there are, the more they're worth, and so there's an incentive to keep hunting them.
Well, isn't it against the rules to hunt them? No?
No. I mean, there are controlled fisheries, but there are plenty that aren't, and there are countries that obey those laws and countries that don't, and it's a little bit of a free-for-all.
You think there are people actually pay $400 or $500 for a piece of tuna?
Sure.
Small piece of tuna?
All right. Absolutely. Getting back to John's first question, anybody have any ideas?
The other question about any restaurants that serve veal, beef, or lamb kidneys, or also gizzards. Gizzards.
Gizzards are great. I have a couple kidneys at the restaurant at Nighthawks that I want to put on the menu. I just haven't done it yet. Kidneys are not my favorite.
Where's that?
In Troy.
Troy.
New York.
Nighthawks,
yeah.
Okay.
So why are kidneys not your favorite?
They have a very strong minerally taste, a little urea kind of taste going on.
Yeah, well, you can imagine, given their function.
They taste like their job they do.
And they're not my favorite.
Okay.
As far as offal goes.
John, thank you for that one. Let's see, who's been waiting longest here? Looks like Irene. Irene in Hillsdale, you're on.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Unfortunately, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, great. So, someone just called with my question, which was about the heart. I, too, have heart, pork, beef in my freezer, but I'm not going to grill it. And I wonder if there's more of a braising type recipe you might like.
You guys, I like heart quick cooked, not slow.
I've slow cooked it before. I did beef heart bourguignon at one point.
You
know, you have to cook it very slow and low. It's great in, pretty much any recipe that has stew meat. Just it will take probably double the time to cook.
Okay. So then, I could do it in my Instant Pot too, I guess.
Yeah. I don't see why not.
Yeah, so the other part of that is, the other part of it has been in my freezer for a while because I tried cooking one once and I just did not like the taste of it. And I grew up eating chicken hearts. My mother used to throw them in
making soup stock all the time. You can see him supply chicken parts by the pound, I think. You know, so I would eat them like a snack at the top of my mouth. But beef heart, I just, there is something about it I just don't like. So, yeah, the stew thing is good. How long do you think they would they be good for when they're in the freezer?
All depends the packaging. If it's a vacuum sealed bag and it's intact, they could last, you know, a year and a half. But if it's a paper wrap, I wouldn't say much more than a year.
Okay. And what if it's 2 years?
I don't know. I might go to the farmer's market and grab another one.
Yeah.
And
what about 10 years while we're at it?
Yeah, well, you maybe want to cure it and then
depends how hungry you are.
All right. Well, Irene, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it a lot. Johanna in Sullivan County is next. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Great show.
Thank you.
You know, I made head cheese, and I got the head from a friend of mine, a farmer who raised pigs, and he just gives me like this head. And it had a lot of you know, whiskers and stuff that like a pig would have naturally. And so it was a lot of effort to prepare it for cooking. And then when I made it, the flavor was good, but then I found that I wasn't totally satisfied with the texture. Like after I cooked it, it was hard to separate the different parts of the face, you know, the different parts. And I wondered if you had any tips on that, whether cooking time or something.
What do you think?
I would say cook it longer so it, you know, falls apart.
Yeah, it should really fall apart.
Oh, it was totally falling apart. Hmm. But then there were little teeny, like, facial bones or stuff that were, it was hard to separate it all. And then certain recipes would sort of, like, specify to only use, let's say, the cheek or, like, the head cavity had, like, little pieces. And then I was just, like, I just wasn't satisfied with the texture.
I would say with any of the things that we're talking about here, if you want to go down this path, commit to doing them more than once and even more than a few times. I've been doing it for a dozen years now, and I really start to feel like I've made some progress, and I kind of have certain things dialed in. But it's like baking bread. You're not going to learn how to do it in a weekend. You want to build a relationship with these products you know, kind of go through the seasons trying different applications and revisit them at the same time next year. And over time, you really will kind of develop a relationship and really start to make some terrific food. But you may not always get it the first time.
All right, Johanna, thanks so much for the call. Over to Tammy in Ghent, New York. Tammy, how are you doing?
Hi, thanks.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I had a question. You know, we're talking a lot of the meat you're talking about is organ meat, and they perform functions in the body. The liver gets rid of toxins, the kidneys, you know, and the gizzards in chickens. And I just wondered, are there any health issues related to the safety or the nutrition of eating these things when they've kind of been immersed in junk?
Yeah, well, that would be my concern as well.
They're not. I wouldn't consider it immersed in junk. I think if an animal is raised really properly and taken good care of, it's a completely healthy practice to consume the organs, and the organs are an essential part of the animal, which should be consumed.
Yeah, if your animal, I mean, is raised properly and isn't given hormones and antibiotics and eats a good diet of ideally as much pasture as possible, then it's a healthy organism, and in the same way that your vegetables are healthy if they're not treated with any of that stuff, there's an extra step involved in the animal metabolizing pesticides or hormones or whatever, but you're still eating it, and it's the same is true for your vegetables. So you want the cleanest food you can, and it's all good to eat.
And in terms of nutrition or vitamins and the proteins and all of that, you'd consider it as
great
nutritious.
For you. Organs are great for you.
Yeah, I know iron, liver has a lot of iron in it. But okay. Well, so I wondered if I had to soak it or salt it or just to try to get
maybe what was might be left in it. But overall, if it's, you say, if it's grass-fed and better, you can be sure of how it was raised. You shouldn't have to worry.
Well, I tell you, one thing that we hear on this program week in and week out is know the source. Know where your food is coming from. And I guess that's what these guys are trying to say. Well, Tammy, thanks for the call. Let's go to Dick in Lenox. Dick, you're on.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I spent a little time in Scotland, and I absolutely love haggis, but I can't bring it back in.
Right.
Because, like, you know, like I'm saying with Kevin, it's got lung in it, and I'm not sure exactly why that makes it unpalatable, but I'm just wondering if there you know of anyone who makes haggis in the area.
I don't. It's really hard because, you know, for a processing plant to and send out lungs or, you know, stomachs or bladders, it's, you know, you have to go through some pretty rigorous documentation take place.
So you're not even aware. Anybody? No?
Okay. No.
All right. Well, thank you for that one. Quickly, let's jump on over to who's been waiting longest here. We go over to Greg in Saratoga Springs. Greg, you're on.
Yeah, hi, guys. Yeah, I just came back from Spain where I ate whole rabbit and snails and beef tongue and all that stuff. And they had all those animal parts we're talking about. But, hey, I was curious as far as, you know, following up on the safety and wild game and so forth. Deer is good meat, but, you know, it's sort of the uncertainty, and I'm not sure where the science is on that, but my wife is paranoid about Lyme disease, and the stuff I've read said, well, no, you can't get it from the blood. But, you know, we're talking earlier about the prions and mad cow and all that stuff. And I was just wondering, you know, what the science says. I mean, because it's one of those worries if you come down with Lyme disease or one of those tick-borne
diseases.
Right.
I mean, to be clear, none of these guys are, you know, researchers into this, scientists.
Yeah.
I have Lyme disease myself.
Yeah, myself as well.
But not, too. Yeah, but from a tick bite that. Lyme disease is spread.
But I guess
the
they can't really answer this question authoritatively.
Yeah, from the blood aspect. Okay.
Yeah,
because that is a concern. The other thing is, I wonder how you guys deal with it, because I eat meat, but for a year I was a vegetarian. I listened to this former rancher. He wrote a book called The Mad Cowboy, and he talks about not only you know, hormone-raised, but any type of meat being just very harmful. And you know, I guess it's an opinion thing again, too, but how do you guys combat that, or how do you guys think of it?
Okay, and only in about 20 seconds, guys, because we're almost done.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead. Did you hear the question?
Yeah, I mean, I just try to consume meat more of as a flavoring agent and less of a main center, like, protein for the meal.
All right, well, I guess that's where we will have to leave this very interesting edition of Food Friday. Peter Barrett, how do people find out about your goings and comings?
Cookblog.com has the post about the next Italy trip in March. We have a little room left, so please come with me. And just plain cookblog on Instagram with no A at the beginning. Just cookblog on Instagram. That's where I'm most often found.
All right, Peter, thank you so much. Mike Lappy, how do we find out more about all those processing projects and such?
You could contact me through Lappy. LappyM at scobleskill.edu or my Instagram, which is mostly wild and free.
All right. And Josh Coletto, Nighthawks.
You can find Nighthawks on Instagram, Nighthawks Troy, and then also nighthawkstroy.com is our website. And then just stop by the restaurant. I'm usually there behind the line.
Well, thank you all for being here. Support comes from Rolling Rock Farm Salt and Seasoning, Sheffield, Massachusetts, handcrafted in small batches, infused sea salts, peppers, and blends. Specializing in garlic and hot pepper blends, RollingRockSalt.com. And South Egremont Spirit Shop, located in the southwest corner of the Berkshires, specializing in curated small production wines and regional handcrafted spirits and beer, real wine for the people, SouthEgremontSpirits.com. Thanks again to Josh, Mike, and Peter for being here. Thank you for listening and for a lot of great calls. Thanks to Zach Malloy for his sterling service all week long. Kayleen White took your calls. Our producer's Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Have a lovely weekend.